This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
But this article is really interesting because it says that waiting until you have a money-related issue means it's too late. Emotions are too high and rash decisions will likely be made.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Shooters Gotta Shoot. I am your co-host, Erica Sparrow.
And I'm Molly DeMillier.
And we've got a great episode for you this week. We're actually looking at an article that kind of a friend of the pod wrote, and we got a little shout-out in, which was very exciting. It's on Insider, and it's called Four Hard Conversations About Dating That Should Be Normalized and How to Have Them. So, before we get into the article, we have a little update from you.
I do have a little update. So the last episode, I think it was came out on New Year's Eve when it was just you and I, and we talked about our resolutions for the new year, and mine was to get out of my head so much, especially in relationships. And Space Jam and I talked about my anxiety.
Yes.
And
okay.
Me being in my head.
Hell yeah. All right. Now, was this like, did he guess at this?
So I've said, I'm like, oh, like I get a little anxious, or like sometimes things would happen like at work or something, like some of those really like fun cryptic emails or like, oh, we should talk about this, or like random meetings dropped on your calendar, and I'd message him and be like, oh, this is real good for the anxiety, like, and I think I okay. said it enough that he was like, oh, this might not be a joke. this might be real.
Okay.
Yeah, it came up because of sort of argument that we were having. It wasn't like really an argument, it was just something that we weren't really seeing eye to eye on, and it's gonna be something that you and I get into way more depth on our Patreon in a couple of weeks, but it was kind of this long thing that I wasn't gonna have answers essentially for like what my position would be on it until I got some news a couple of weeks out. So essentially it was this like long-standing thing that neither of us could really actively do something about and totally disagreed on. So I had to wait for this news for us to like have a conversation. And because of that, we were kind of just like going round and round in the initial conversations that we were having. But then we were finally both just like, okay, let's table it until like X date when we get the information. And I cannot just like tell anyone not to do this, like so much more, like it was so bad. And he, like for him, he was just living a dream. He was like, ah, you know, we're not talking about it, it's, you know, we put put a pin in it. And my head was spinning for close to 2 weeks of just not, it was not good, because it was like such a big thing that I really wanted to be able to talk to him about. And every time that like I would get a new thought, I was like, oh, I really want to talk to Space Jam, but I had promised that I wouldn't bring it up. And so I was like, well, now I can't go back on that promise. Like I thought he would be upset about that. I thought he was like really upset and just didn't want to talk about it at all. So, you know, when we finally like were able to have the conversation, when I did have like more news to talk around, and I was like, like, I'm not angry because we agreed to do this, but I don't want to do it again. If there's ever a situation that we disagree on, like, we need to be able to talk about it. I need to be able to go to you. And he was like, you can always come to me. And I was like, no, we can't. Do you remember putting a pin in it?
Yeah,
like, that's not what that means. So I was like, I have been so stressed out. I've been so anxious. I haven't really been sleeping. Like, this is just not good. Like, my head has been spinning. And I was like, I really felt for the last like 2 weeks, because it was like, you know, New Year's Eve fell into that time period, a lot of time together. I was like, every time we were together, I was really starting to weigh, like, you know, if he doesn't get the answer that he wants on this date, like, are we gonna break up, or is this day like he's leaning more towards he's gonna be with me? I was like, I was weighing every little thing that you did, like if you didn't, you know, seem super eager over text, or, you know, when we hung out, like, how were you feeling? Like, every day I was weighing that in my head. And he was like, oh, that's real bad. That's, we can't have that. That's okay.
Yeah, like, and been there.
Yeah. And you can't control it. You can't turn that off.
No.
And knowing that you can't talk about it, for me personally, just, it made my wheels turn more. You know, I thought it was a good resolution of like, all right, you know what? This conversation's not getting anywhere. Let's just, you know, table it. We'll move on. No, 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 no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing you said to me directly is you were like, I feel like I have to be this perfect girlfriend now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's done.
Yeah. I felt that pressure really hard. And it was definitely pressure that I put on myself. And that's the anxiety of it, of just, I felt like one mistake, he was going to be like, you know what? Like, I don't even need to wait until this date. We don't, because that's essentially the conversation we were going to have of like, do we stay together or not? And it made me realize just like how fragile everything is. You know, we really haven't been together that long. But the thing about what we're going to be really talking about today is like being able to have conversations around these things. Mm-hmm. And if you're like, I brought that up of like, this is not good for me and my anxiety. Like, this is a real thing. You got to be ready for the actual conversation about it, though.
Yes.
Because what he asked me that really surprised me, and he was like, okay, like, this is a real thing. Like, do you have any vices?
Interesting.
I was like, yes. I do.
You're like, yes, I do.
And part of me was like, we could skate by this and not really address it. I was like, that's not good.
What'd you say, like, with the vices?
So I definitely run a lot, and I run to extremes, and it, to the point where it can get unhealthy. That actually happened when I was training for a marathon. I got to the point where I couldn't get a like a mental release until I was running like 20 miles. And so then post marathon, I actually did a ton of damage to my knee and almost needed another surgery because I couldn't stop, because that was the only way that my mind would slow down, was if I got this like mental release. And the other thing that'll happen when I'm not getting it from running is, and if something really big happens, is I will drink more.
Okay.
And that's something that I've more recently noticed about myself. And I'm like, I don't know, running, like, someone doesn't really get it. They're like, oh, that's cute. And I'm like, no, I'm destroying my bones. Like, it's not. It's actually extremely unhealthy. But alcohol, people are kind of like, whoa. Like,
right, you're like, I have a healthy vice and I have a unhealthy vice.
That's the way it looks.
And realistically, yeah, I do both.
Yeah.
Which is honest, because I knew the drinking, you've talked about that a little bit on the pod, but I didn't know, off the top of my head, I didn't think the running thing.
Yeah, that's why I run.
Yeah.
I don't run because I love to run. I run because my mind goes insane if I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, now we know why I don't run.
Because you're mentally well.
I mean, you'll probably take this as, you might take this as offensive, but honestly, you and other people I know that have anxiety, whether it's running or just like the need to work out that's like in them, I look at them and I'm like a little jealous. I'm like, I don't have that. I'm like, I'll feel better just in general of just like endorphins and like happier with myself if I work out. But I'm like, oh, I could easily skip a day.
skip
a few, you know.
It's so much like a larger, like, intense anxiety, but then also just like major body dysmorphia that goes into it with people like that. And it's a whole path we can go down.
Yep.
That's not fun.
Yep.
So that was just, it was a very interesting conversation, actually having to like admit it. And I was also like kind of drunk when I told him. So I was like, well, I feel like, you know, it's the drinking. So here we are.
That's hard. That's like the blow off steam right now for a lot of people.
Yeah, so exactly. Nothing,
nowhere to go, not much to do. Because I was going to say, was there like a solution to the conversation?
Yeah, you know, I think it ended really well of just, we're not going to do that anymore. You know, we got through what we needed to get through, but we both were kind of like, okay, we do need to be able to talk to each other and both feel like it is an open door of communication. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it ended really positively. And now knowing like more of the anxiety, I think he is a little bit more aware, because I can see like even the times when he's busy over text, like if he's short with something, all of a sudden like he'll follow up with a little bit more of like if he, because sometimes he'll get like really busy with work and not be able to say too much. And I think he's starting to think of like, okay, her wheels are spinning. Like, let's not let this happen. Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think Lindsay mentioned that a little bit, not out of anxiety, but she said in a relationship, she's like, I need a consistent communication from you. Like, I think it was one of the deal breakers was like not hearing from them every day.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But you got to communicate that. You got to kind of be like, yeah, I just want to hear from you every day, or whatever your thing is, whatever your standard is.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I remember when she said that, I was kind of like, you know, me and Space Jam don't really have that. I think I even said that to you off mic of like, you know, we don't talk to each other every single day. Like, I feel really secure about this. But now this like really goes back to the attached book of the second someone like me, who's more of an anxious attachment style, the second you start to feel a little bit of like the fragility of the relationship, like, then you really need that. And so now I'm really trying to check myself of like, don't be too needy, don't be too much.
Yeah,
because he is good, he is really secure, and in the back of my head I do know that. So it's like I need to take the time to like really reassure myself of those things,
right,
and not end up pushing him away, because I think that's something that could ultimately happen.
I mean, I never think it's what someone is doing is pushing the other person away in the sense of actually makes them break up with you and fully go away.
Right.
Because even with the like tough time you were just going through for 2 weeks, I was like, listen, this is a real relationship test, regardless of how long you've been with someone, because I had that of there was like the one bad day where it was like, we're just not clicking, something's off, or like I wasn't in the best mood, and then like I like cried a little and like all that stuff. But I was like, then my relationship ended, like not immediately, but in 2 weeks. Yeah. And it was like, that was the start of it going downhill. And I was like, what really showed me though was the other person's reaction and how they handled it, and then what they did afterwards. So I think like how that person reacts is very telling, because it's also like you're gonna have bad moments or bad days or whatever, and it's like your partner should like help you through it, not kind of just either stand by, do nothing, ignore it, or like ghost and bounce.
Yeah.
And you're suddenly like, oh, okay, you were in this for fun time, but you can't handle a couple hours of like me being upset.
Yeah, you're not here when it gets real.
Right. Yeah. Like that's kind of making you be like, oh man, I gotta like really do boyfriend work now.
And right.
It's like, well, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, but you have to have the confidence in yourself to be that full person and not try to hide those things.
Yeah.
That's what's hard. And that's why all those stupid books that are kind of like basically hide this forever, we're like, that's impossible.
Right.
It's impossible to do that.
You're human.
And if you can do that, I don't know how. You're psychotic.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone who's psychotic can do that.
Yeah.
That's like a Dirty John. Like the guy who just stole that woman's life.
Yeah.
You know?
And with anything.
Yeah. Those are the people who commit crimes.
My God.
Yeah. But I mean, do you have any, like, aside from herpes, do you have any, like, hard dating conversations that you feel like come up based on just, like, we're going to be diving in today to, like, taboos?
I mean, yeah, herpes is my big one. All the other conversations kind of feel normal, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I'd say money is always kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Certain things like that come up, but I haven't been with someone yet that comes up. Like, of, like, do you want a prenup? Do you not?
Yeah.
How much money do you make? Do you want to move in? What do you want to pay in rent? What are you paying rent right now? What do you make? Like, it's considered taboo to ever ask those questions, or they're just hard conversations.
Yeah. Do you think, at what point do you think you should know a partner's salary? Or do you think it's
ever
important?
You would naturally know within like a year of being with somebody.
I feel like it does kind of end up being more of just like a buttoned up thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you ever just straight up ask people like, what do you make? Or like, how
I've
do
never done that
it?
With someone I was dating.
Yeah.
I've had people dating naturally tell me because something would come up that I didn't bring up at all. They just kind of dropped it in the convo.
Mm-hmm.
That made me just kind of go, oh, I guess like they really trust me and don't have any walls up about this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a weird thing of sometimes people that make a lot of money are not shy about it, or they are almost like they try to hide it from you as a test. But this is the classic, like, because we're women, and if they're men, there's this like gold digger kind of mentality.
Yeah.
That they're like, I don't want a gold digger, so like, I'm not going to be doing crazy elaborate things, or like, I'm not going to be taking you to crazy nice places, or like, I'm not going to tell you how much money I make, because then I feel like that might be the only reason you're staying with me.
Yeah, that's
situation.
True.
Or even I've known some people to not bring people like to their apartment.
Oh, interesting.
For both reasons of success and being unsuccessful.
Interesting. Yeah, you would think it would be more so the unsuccessful side.
Right. It's interesting. I've had friends that I've felt hesitant, and I'll even just say, do you mind if I ask, like, how much do you make? But I mainly only ever ask that question if it's like they're complaining about their job.
Yeah, that's true. It, like, if they want to move on.
Yeah, if they're like, you know, because also if they're talking about they're complaining, they want to apply somewhere else. I'm kind of like, well, what's the salary that you would for sure leave?
Mm-hmm.
What do you make now? When's the last time you got a raise? But that's like, we're having a business convo and I'm trying to like help them talk through it.
Right.
Like, they know I'm not, what, I'm not there for their money. I'm not dating them. Like, I'm not going to get it either way, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like, I wish people were more transparent about their salaries. Like, I get why they're not, but I think money conversations are fascinating. But this article is really interesting because it says that waiting until you have a money related issue means it's too late. Emotions are too high and rash decisions will likely be made.
Interesting.
So it's like, do you think that that kind of means that you have to bring it up before it's really on the table with any kind of stakes?
Well, I'm wondering what they exactly mean by like issue, because I feel like this might be the opportunity for some people. They're like, oh, great. This is when I can say something of like, hey, you know, like, that trip you suggested, it's a little pricey for me right now.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you're still paying off a loan that you have. Or you're like, hey, look, through the pandemic, I was out of work a couple months. I got a little credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm focusing on, like, paying that.
Mm-hmm.
And you suggest, like, an alternative. I'm like, I don't think there's any shame in that.
Yeah, I think if you approach really any sort of, like, conflict conversation with a resolution, I feel like that's better way to have the conversation.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this is a little bit like anticipating that it's just like talking about an issue versus like ways to mend it.
Right.
Because this does actually talk about debt, but I think that's really interesting in that your point about the pandemic and so many people being out of work is that there's gonna be a lot of debt.
Yeah, there's gonna be people in debt, or even I have a friend that took out a loan to just fully pay off her credit cards.
Mm.
So then was like, oh, now I'm going to do a payment plan to just pay back the loan so that I didn't get hit. Like, she was going to get hit less because like loan interest right now is like almost nothing.
Right.
So it like that's how she figured her own finances out. And it's like, good for you.
Right.
But it's like, okay, if she's dating somebody and she still has a loan, I don't know, you say it's even for $5,000. But I think a lot of people think like college loans. Right?
Yeah.
If you marry someone, your loans, your debt becomes their debt, essentially. Yeah. Right. Legally. I don't know. I mean, I've never been in a big debt problem, so I'm not 1,000% sure how I would navigate it.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's something to owning whatever your thing is.
Yeah. I have a lot of college debt, mm-hmm. and I've definitely, like, talked to Space Jam about it, and, like, I talk about it pretty openly that, like, I have a plan for paying it back, and I pay my loans.
Yeah.
And I know he's definitely coming at it from a position of, you know, not being in any debt and having a really good job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He doesn't have to worry about it. So I don't know. Sometimes it makes me feel like a little kid in the conversation of like, I definitely make way less money. I don't know what he makes, but I know I make less and I do have this debt. And it does make me feel a little bit financially insecure and
mm-hmm.
in some ways looking like I'm not really on my shit, even though I am. So I know it's a really interesting position to be in, I guess.
I've felt this a lot with people. I was like, I'm good at managing my money. I'm not in debt. And I have a savings and I have like a little account that I like invest in some stocks and stuff. But like when you just go, how much money do you make a year?
Mm-hmm.
My number's not impressive.
Right.
So it's something that like, if anything, if someone only asked me that question and then judged me just based on that, I'd kind of be annoyed. So I'd be like, oh, that's the money that comes in every year. But that's not the money that gets accumulated here or saved here, or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm like, but I'm very good at saving that I actually might be better off financially than you are. Like,
right.
A lot of times when you make more money, you just spend more money.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's interesting of like, we always stress like, oh, should you know how much they make? And it's like, I mean, a lot of times, like, till people get married, you don't fully know what's going on in their finances.
Yeah, you should really know their, like, lifestyle.
But like, how can you?
Yeah.
If it's like, I'm not looking at your bank statements. I'm not looking at your credit card.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good point. Because there are so many different areas where someone can, like, fuck up their finances.
Yeah, there's so many parts that you can. And a lot of people have. And whatever, made mistakes when they're older, younger, whatever, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely true. Then, okay, I think that makes a little bit more sense, though, thinking about it a little bit more holistically on the point of money relate, like waiting to talk until it's an issue means that it's too late. Because I, from like a financial portfolio perspective, if it's like that all is crashing down, mm-hmm. it's like, well, there's not a whole lot we can do here, but we are legally bounded to each other.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's brutal.
Or like, you know what's interesting? The whole thing about should you live with someone before you're married, right?
Yeah.
Part of that theory of, I think also why it like almost works better to like be married than live together, is if you're doing the old school route of marriage means my money's your money, everything gets combined, it's now suddenly not like, what half of the rent am I paying and what half are you paying? It's just like, what are we paying? What is our total budget? Like, what's our total income? What's our total expenses? Like if you're really looking at it that way, then I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. It's basically like, why have this conversation and divide stuff if then we're going to essentially just combine it all? Like, well, like in the old mentality, I'm like, I think it, that's why it makes sense.
Well, I know a lot of people now will start to, well, they will like make an account, a joint account,
yeah,
before they're married. Because you don't need to be married to make a bank account.
No,
with
you don't.
So anyway, you can make a bank account with anyone. So they'll make a joint account and then slowly like start to put money in there and have like a joint credit card to it. And then up until the wedding, it'll slowly just be like their account together, yeah, and like move assets together. And I think that's smart, because then real quick when you're looking at the credit card statements, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm saying the old school way of thinking, mm-hmm. that move makes sense then.
Right.
Of like, we're not going to live together before we're married. We're going to get married. We're going to find everything, get a place to go. Like, then it's like everything together. I'm not saying I would necessarily do that, but I'm like, yeah, if you go complete old school way of thinking, that's the only plus I could see, is like, oh, there's not this whole dividing argument of like, right, well, you make more, should you pay 2/3 and I pay 1/3 and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah.
When it's like, if we just combine like your income, my income, this is our total income now, we're both claiming on taxes, so this is our budget.
Yeah.
Like, I would think when you truly love someone, you don't really see it as like, well, this money is mine and I don't want it to be spent that way. It's like, what right, do we want to do? Which is easier, yeah, when it's like, okay, all the money's going to the same place.
I don't know. I feel I have such a like cover your own ass mentality.
I know. I'm not saying I would do it. But.
Yeah. Oh, the thought of like waiting. I absolutely would not. I would 100% do a prenup. I've already told Space Jam that. And like progressively get to that point together.
Yeah.
Could you imagine like the first day of your honeymoon, basically? I mean, that's really not what it is, but in my head, that's the way it works. Mm-hmm. Of like day one of being married, like the cake is still out on the table, and then instantly every single thing that you have like just combines into mm-hmm. one thing. That's my nightmare.
Right. Well, this is also of getting married later. If you get married later, for most people, you're going to have stuff that you didn't have when you were young.
Yeah, you have a lot 20s. More to lose.
Yeah, if you're both just fresh out of 20, it's like, yeah, it's almost like for certain things of even affording an apartment, like a one bedroom, right?
Yeah, or
wherever
even
you live,
loans.
You might need that dual income to even afford it,
yeah,
right? To afford that and both be paying your loans and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, of course, everything's just looked at what's we then, because you need each other to be paying the bills. But if you're at the point in your life you don't need each other to be paying the bills,
yeah,
then that's where it's like, okay, how do we like combine this? But like, I kind of like having my ability to kind of spend what I want and not feel like someone's gonna look at it and be like, why'd you spend that much so much money on Nike, Molly? Right.
Because they have a new court to runway line.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's like, I don't know what the equivalent is for men and like women with shopping, but, or some men are shoppers too, I don't know. You know, it's just, it's interesting. I grew up in a town that most people were married, everything was combined, so it was very rare for me to hear, and it was actually my health teacher in high school talked about, they made a system of like a percentage of their checks, him and his wife, would go into the joint account that paid for all the joint stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the other stuff they just kept separate and had their own credit cards.
That's interesting. I love that you brought up like that's the way you were raised with it. Because one thing that this article talks about is like taboos a lot of times come from a cultural point. And mm-hmm. like that's also the way everything was in my town. That's really the way everybody operated, or you were led to believe that.
Right.
But if you found out that someone didn't, you kind of had this... people looked at them differently, and you know, it was the conversations. It was like, he almost felt like something was wrong in the marriage. And like, why do they do that? That's not how a married couple operates. And it just, it felt wrong and weird. But it's now growing up at, or becoming more like financially successful and like having, you know, not only like my own debt, but also, you know, my own salary and things to manage. I'm like, but that is mine. And like, if I, if someone is financially irresponsible, I wouldn't want to lose that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, I think a lot of times nowadays it's like you build into combining stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how Paul Schisler and his wife did everything, but I remember he told me like, oh, there was a day I was like, oh, let me add my wife to my investment account because they started combining everything. And he was like, and he actually got mad at me for even suggesting that, like, a lot of people keep stuff separate. And I was like so shocked, not like mad, but he kind of was like, that's so stupid. Like, why would someone do that? Like, I'm marrying you. You're my wife. Like, I'm trusting you with everything.
There's, and I was like, 50% divorce rate.
Right. I know. But I was just like, I mean, I just was like, I don't know, Paul, like, just a lot of people don't fully dive in like that away. Like, you know, kind of thing. So,
it's
interesting. But that was the first I heard of a man not liking the idea.
Really?
Like, he kind of was like, why wouldn't my wife add me to all her stuff?
Yeah.
Like, he kind of was like, I would feel like they were hiding something from me.
Well, yeah.
And I was like, well, that's also a valid argument. So that it's like, it really depends on the person. And I think it's just another thing in compatibility.
That's true. Oof, it's such tough conversations. And then price points from there. It's like, oh, God.
Exactly.
Right? So, stay alone forever.
Because it sucks. No one wants to be the person that can't afford something.
Right.
Like, man, woman, whoever you are. That just sucks to say.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you're like, yes, I know this couch is nicer. I would also like this couch. But I can't afford half the couch.
Right.
And then it's like, how are you going to react when the person either offers to pay more or even just buy the whole couch themselves, or just kind of is like, oh, okay. And it's like, all right, we won't get that couch, you know?
It feels like shit.
It feels shitty either way. Yeah. Part of you is like, man, I kind of wish they would just offer to buy the couch.
Yeah. And then if they're just like, all right, you're like, okay, so what's the point? Like, what is our price point for everything?
Yeah. Like, but I would say there is something to the attitude of it, though, I think, going in, of like, I've had friends basically being like, I'm not splitting furniture in case we break up. And it's like, I think you indirectly already feel like you might break up.
Yeah, they're preparing for a breakup.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So,
yeah, I think the furniture is a really big call on that. Because it's like, even when you move in with friends and you're together for years, at the end, you usually just sell the fucking couch. But for some reason, when couples break up, the littlest things, it's like, that is my end table. I bought that 5 years ago.
Dude, that's, I met a friend that I knew was in a bad relationship or whatever, wasn't working out. Let's not say bad relationship, wasn't working out. And I asked him about if he moved out. He goes, I already know what pieces I want.
Oh my
God. Like, already was like, these things are mine, or like, these are the only things I'd fight for, and she could just have the rest of it.
That's like when someone, like, you have a grandparent that's going to die, and you're like, know what things in their house you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're like, well,
like, is that a weird thing to say?
You're like, can we talk about this now?
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
The other thing this article says is really taboo to talk about is sexuality, which I think is really interesting. Because basically, as a society, we've been trained to make assumptions about sexuality. So, you know, whether, like, if you think about just like a straight person, a gay person, you know, whatever it is, like, you have a mental image of them. And so you make assumptions about a person's like sexual history too, when you are dating. And I don't, have you ever asked a partner if they've always been straight?
Like, if they've ever experimented?
Yeah.
I've never straight up asked that. But I've had scenarios of like, whether it be talking to someone through a dating app or on a date, where it's like kind of come up.
Oh, really?
Because I find that essentially if someone's not doing whatever, quote, the norm is, they bring it up.
Oh, okay.
So that's like, a good friend of mine is, quote, ethically non-monogamous.
Okay.
This is kind of a new term. It does not mean poly, and it does not mean open relationship. It's kind of its own category with rules.
Okay.
And he's now just been like, yeah, I just put it on like my dating profiles.
Oh, interesting.
And he's like, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of other people that already have it on there because it's just kind of like, hey, it saves time.
Yeah.
You know, but that's something that it's like he brings up.
Yeah.
It's like, that's his thing. So it's like, well, kind of is on you to bring up at the same time. Yeah, you can't always assume everything about everybody.
Yeah. I agree that it's on that person, like whatever it is to bring up, because I don't think I would want to be surprised with it. Like when I read this, I actually thought about it a lot, like the way we've talked about disclosing herpes and other STDs. Mm-hmm. And I think about like where I was before you told me about it. And yeah, a lot of things about sexuality are similar to STDs. People just don't really talk about it. Mm-hmm. So like personally, I don't really know a lot of people within like the LGBTQ community or that have experimented a lot sexually. Like I don't personally know a lot of those people. So if someone did tell me something or I found something out about someone, I wouldn't initially know how to respond. So I would want to have some time to like think about it and not, I guess I would more rather like be told and have an opportunity to make a decision mm-hmm. about how I felt in the relationship versus like having to react because I found something out, if that makes sense.
True.
You know,
but especially like, with experimenting.
Yeah.
Because you can't know that.
Right.
Based on someone.
But it's this weird part of diving into someone's sexual history, which can be uncomfortable because like mm-hmm. you don't really want to think about the person that you're sleeping with and like their past partners.
Yeah.
So it's touchy.
Yeah, I mean, it's touchy with them, but it's also even touchy on, like, say that's not the issue. You're both, whatever, two straight people, two gay people, two fluid people, whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? Say you're exactly the same as your partner, sexuality, history-wise, right? Mm-hmm. Let's even say, like, in terms of, like, body count, all right? Say yeah. you're both like, yeah, I don't know, I'm in the 20s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not three people, and I'm not 1,000, right? It's interesting of, like, on a very even smaller level, there's even just... We talked about this, I think, with Lev and Jordan a little bit, of like opening the door or openly saying things you want sexually that you're worried about your partner judging you.
Yeah.
Like specific things.
Yeah.
Literally us sleeping together.
Right.
And like expanding or just doing something different and blah, 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 and trying to like find other people's comfort zones
mm-hmm.
is very intimidating.
Yeah, it is. It's really hard to ask for certain things. And even I was listening to this Esther Perel video that... she was talking about sexual fantasies
mm-hmm.
and why they're really hard to ask for because it is so like expressing sexuality is so taboo and like you're told to really like keep it buttoned up and you feel really dirty.
Yeah.
The other thing I was really thinking about this too is that homophobia is a very sneaky thing mm-hmm. and there are so many people who they're cool with it as long as it's happening over there and they don't have to think about it. They don't have to know about it. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have experienced this where you're having a conversation, you're talking about, you know, say like the Pride Parade, and then someone says something a little weird and you're like, wait a second,
yeah.
you know? And then all of a sudden it's like, if this is someone who's like really close and you're like, oh, you actually don't support this potentially, or, you know, you're really not okay with these people. I think as, you know, society progresses and people do come out and express sexuality more, I think those things are going to be, people are going to take a much harder stand as they mm-hmm. should. So I think that's also a place where it's really important to have those conversations.
Yeah. I mean, also we want to talk real future of the world is like transgender is not that it wasn't ever normal, but it's being more normalized of people are talking about it.
And they're having surgeries done.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And more people are knowing people personally that are now going through the surgeries mm-hmm. and becoming transgender. Right. But it's like, as time goes on and, you know, technology increases, it's gonna be completely impossible to tell, I think.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, even now. So there's many people that I'm like, if I didn't know you before and know you went through this, mm-hmm. I would have no idea.
Yeah.
Very highly likely I could be talking to some guy somewhere, mm-hmm. get his number, be into him, blah, blah, blah. At some point he could reveal, like, I was actually originally born female.
Yeah.
When I went through all the surgeries, blah, blah, blah. Give me their little spiel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, I don't know how I would react.
Yeah.
I've never had to be in that conversation. Many people have not. And yeah. it's like, that could easily happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And that's something that's like, that's realistically what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially as they're learning more and more about people who are transgender, don't identify with the body that they're born into
mm-hmm.
and the surgeries are happening so much younger. And so not only yeah. is like technology getting better, but it's people are going through it at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally agree with you. That's going to be something down the line that right now, like, I'm on the position that the person who goes through the change, I think the onus is on them to share that when they're ready and they're comfortable with a partner. You know, like, personally, I would want it to be before anything physical happened, to be able to, like, really think about things and make the decision for myself.
But I feel like that's going to be another debate.
I think it's going to be a huge debate.
Do transgender people have to disclose that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we even debate that in Herpes group.
Really?
Of, like, especially with type 1. I have a friend recently slept with someone that had herpes, and he just wanted to get tested, you know, afterwards, as you do, just to kind of check. And he talked to me about it, and he was like, they have type 1. And I literally told him, most likely your doctor is going to be like, nah, don't bother. You don't need to get tested.
Yeah.
Exactly what happened.
Really?
Exactly what happened. He went in, and the doctor was like, well, listen, type 1, pretty much everybody has it, blah, blah, blah. You have no outbreaks, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You really don't need to get tested.
Okay.
And then he kind of was like, he was already in tune with, like, herpes knowledge, even just being my friend. And he kind of was like, oh, like, I don't know. Should I still get tested? And I was like, I mean, my theory is everyone should, because it's going to just normalize it more.
Yeah.
But I was like, I have type 1, but on my vagina. So I was like, you know how you've said to me, like, you have to tell people even if they're just going down on you. I'm like, you just went to a doctor that basically told you the opposite. Because I've been told before that I don't have to tell anybody anything at any point.
So this friend was telling you that you needed to always disclose no matter what the act.
Yeah,
basically?
Like, I was having a convo with him about how I didn't disclose to someone once with going down.
Okay.
And he was, because I was like, give me your honest opinion that someone without herpes. Mm-hmm. So it was so funny that then flash forward, he was with someone that had herpes.
Interesting.
And didn't tell him, and he was upset, but then went to the doctor, and the doctor basically was like, I mean, you're fine.
Yeah. And so, do you know if the person had an outbreak, or then they just later were like, hey, by the way, like, I do have herpes?
It was a scenario of the person felt guilty.
Oh,
then told them after. But he basically, we came to the conclusion of, like, you're either telling people or you're not telling them.
Yeah.
Telling them after is kind of is a shitty thing.
Whatever. Yeah, like, if you're not going to continue to sleep with the person.
Right. But he was very mad that the decision was taken away from him.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that's fair. I was like, but I was like, it's also on you.
Yeah,
like, you should be asking
ask.
People when they've gotten tested.
Yeah, especially hookups.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, it's not total. I mean, it's no one's total fault, but I kind of was like, look, when I've not told people, that was kind of my argument.
Right.
I was like, they aren't asking any questions.
Right.
You know, like, why is it fully on me? So it's, I mean, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it's a very interesting debate, especially, like, if you're not using condoms, like, if you're putting yourself in that situation, like, you should be asking a lot of questions. And, I mean, for a hookup, you should definitely be using condoms, obviously, but damn.
Right.
So, did he end up getting tested, or was the doctor just, like, straight up, no, don't do this?
He didn't.
Okay.
Because he didn't have an outbreak and stuff, and it wasn't like he was super upset, but it was just interesting to have that conversation.
Did, like, it change his view on...
It more changes who he said, I'm, like, 100% going to just ask partners now.
Okay.
Like, ahead of time, okay, before I do anything. And I was like, yeah. But that's something with, like, I don't know, if someone was, you know, transgender, and they said to me, like, yeah, I don't feel the need to tell people if I'm just gonna hook up with them and, like, not really see them again, I'm like, well, yeah, because they're not putting any physical health at danger to a person,
right? Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, look, if that person finds out, though, they might be mad about it. They have a right to be mad. But I'm like, but I think, yeah, you have a right to, you don't have to tell.
Yeah, I think hookups are a different category. I think if you're looking at, like, building a relationship with somebody, and you're like, okay, I feel like a connection, I want to take things slow, I think it does need to come out usually sooner than before having sex, because, again, I think that's, like, where your friend was sort of, like, the decision is taken away.
Yeah.
But I think on a hookup, honestly, I feel like a lot is fair game, because nobody's really telling anybody anything.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to get so tricky.
And it is. I mean, there's no, you know, like herpes, there's no direct rules, rhymes, or reasons to it.
Yeah.
Like, I've had many doctors be like, yeah, you just have type 1. You don't got to tell anybody that.
So interesting.
And I'm like, but I got it from someone and had an outbreak. So it's like, knowing how I got it, that feels very unfair to say.
Yeah. Like, you didn't get it from a water glass.
Right.
Because, like, of where it is.
Yeah. Like, I got it from a person. I don't know if they knew or not, but... It feels like, look, they weren't showing any signs and still passed it, so it's like, it is possible.
Right.
So I do, you know, I agreed in general, like, honesty is the best policy, and you got to kind of bite the bullet with any of these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, they're all super interesting. One of the things that it talks about in a bit of like Esther Perel's thing is like we said earlier, of taboos coming from like culture or like societal norms and some of like totalitarian states.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like any part of your the way that you approach having herpes is rooted in any of those areas? Probably not a totalitarian state, if I'm going to take
not
a guess.
Not that, but it's just like, look, yeah, culturally in the U.S., herpes is considered like this bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stigma of people that have it are like dirty or like slutty or et cetera, or like not safe or et cetera, et cetera. So like, yeah, that's why disclosing to people is so hard, is because it's not like when people go, oh, I have HPV, and everyone goes, doesn't everybody have HPV?
Right.
Like, stuff like that. You know, or even, I don't know, I feel like even like chlamydia, all that other stuff has been pretty normalized.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, the most people know about herpes is it's forever, and they think it's this big deal. And then everyone that gets it realizes it's not. They're like, yeah, it only feels like it is when I have to tell people. I met a couple people that have herpes that used to live somewhere else, like countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, I had zero problem with this.
Really?
And now I live in America, and everybody has a problem with it.
Oh, that's so weird.
Right. So, because they were like, yeah, over there, it's just like, yeah, herpes, everybody's got that. You're fine.
Wow.
You know?
That's so interesting. So. Americans suck.
Well, yeah, or even just like there's stigmas in like, you know, I think you said religion earlier.
Yeah.
Of like within religious groups.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stigmas.
Yeah. Do you think herpes would have much of a stigma or feel so taboo? If, because like when you mentioned HPV, it made me think of it, like, I really don't even know what that is. Do you think if it was HSV, people would even actually understand what it was?
They might or they might not, but it does make it seem like less of a thing.
Yeah.
Or that makes you realize how on par it is with other things.
Like, what if you just started telling people I have HSV?
That's usually how I tell people.
Really?
I say that before I say the word herpes.
Like, what if you just stopped using the word herpes? And you'd be like, look, it's not a thing. Like, I take a medicine. I do have HSV. I want you to know.
I mean, I technically could do that.
Yeah.
But it's just like,
because no one fucking knows what that means.
I mean, some people do, but it's rare. But yeah. I usually say I have HSV-1. And then I go, which is like cold sores.
Okay.
And I say, but I have it like downstairs.
Okay.
At that point. And I was like, and yes, technically it's herpes.
Okay.
And I'm like, not a problem. Never give it to someone. Blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But there's something of like, I don't know. I feel herpes. Like it like cushions the blow.
Yeah.
It feels like a hard punch to just be like, I have herpes.
Right.
So.
Well, because it's the butt of every joke. Not like every joke, but like there's so many things out there. And it's like the whole point of the joke is like, don't sleep with that person. So that's what anybody knows culturally is like that it's bad.
Yeah. I mean, and what I said in this article, it's like, I could give you tips on how to tell people or ways to tell them or maybe when you should tell them. But it's like actually telling them literally is just going to come from practice and you doing it.
Yeah.
Like that part I can't do for you.
It's all about the reps.
I could just help you motivate you to get there.
Yeah.
You know, and put it out there. But it's like, yeah, I was terrible the first handful of times.
Yeah.
I told people and it's like that was how I got better.
Well, I think that's any of these conversations, right? It's like learning how to have them because they are so rooted in so many things that you've been told your whole life, and like that's the point. And like with even just societal norms, right? So it's like everything that you are made to believe, and then it's like as you get older and kind of get your own perspective and you peel back the layers, there's so many of these things that you're just like, oh, this really isn't that hard,
right?
You know, like, or we're making it so much harder.
I don't know, I don't even know what to directly say about it other than it's like, yeah, you gotta just do it. You got to put it out there in some way. Someone's going to take the bullet of opening up first.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times when it's like, I'll just start by asking them this. There's ways people can dodge it or give vague answers.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like you're prying.
Right.
Where it's like I think the best foot first is like just open it up about your thing and then kind of throw it to them and see what they say.
Yeah.
And see if they open up.
Yeah.
But it's just like you're basically being like, the door's open for me.
Right.
Like, clearly I'm comfortable talking about it.
Like, it takes someone being a bit vulnerable to get some vulnerability out of another person.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's, I think that's what makes the conversation so hard, is that really to be able to, like, get what you want, you got to give a little bit, which no one really wants to do that.
No.
You know?
Or we all have been there where you're like, I just opened up there about my feelings. and I got nothing.
And here we are.
And that hurt. Yeah. Like, good to know.
That is the worst.
Yeah. I mean, it's a rejection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been there.
Oh, that's brutal. We've all been there.
The only last thing I'll say is just like, that was something that partly frustrated me with like dealing with herpes was like seeing the world open up so much more about like mental health problems and people very openly saying like, I have bipolar disorder, I have this, I deal with it, like all those different types of things, which I think is great. I'm not knocking it, but I was almost like sitting there being like, well, when's herpes turn?
Yeah.
When are people finally going to be like, yeah, and I have herpes. It's not a big deal.
Right.
Like whether you're married, single, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of that thing. Like a lot of times, unfortunately, it takes someone at a high celebrity level to be coming out and open about something. And then the world goes, oh, it's okay.
Well, yeah. And at this point so I think there's a few layers to it. I think that's exactly right. Mm. And at this point, the only way that we've talked about herpes at that level is a scandal. When you think about like R. Kelly. And there's a few other
R.
Like
Kelly,
Shia LaBeouf.
Usher. Shia LaBeouf.
Mm-hmm. And it's like they're, I mean, R. Kelly is absolutely like an animal, but the rest of them are like made out to be these monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, it's kind of clickbait on a lot of stuff by, you know, tabloids. Yep. So I think that's hurting it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the other layer on this is that there's, in general, talking about sex is for so many people just a non-starter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so to be able to talk about herpes, you have to be able to openly talk about sex, any STD,
right?
And I think so many people are not ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like even this podcast, there's some people that are like, oh my god, like all you guys talk about is sex. And it's like, we actually talk about a lot of other things.
Yeah.
But things so quickly get labeled as dirty.
Mm-hmm.
If sex is attached to it at all.
Yeah.
And I think there's got to be like a little bit more growth. And obviously like that's the point of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to start like moving the fence post just a little bit more and more until people are ready for that conversation.
Yeah.
There is so much research happening of them actually being able to create a vaccine to help it from continue, because it's a virus. So you should be able to actually, I mean, hopefully all viruses you can eradicate.
Yeah.
So honestly, you never hear about herpes like vaccination research.
No, you don't. Sorry. No.
Right. So when we make it, that yeah.
We'll do that later. Yeah. When we make it, join the Patreon.
Yeah.
Help us fund herpes research. I don't know, thank you guys for listening this week. If you want to submit a review, because we're giving away some money, which we're very close to, just write a review on Apple Podcasts, submit that to enter. And if you want more content, more exclusive behind the scenes stuff, join our Patreon, which is patreon.com/shootersgottashoot. And as always, I'm at Sparica with two A's,
and I'm at the _guacamole,
and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye
bye.